It's time for another edition of The Rocketry Show at therocketryshow.com. It's episode 55, and it's a Christmas party special. So we're going to be talking rockets, but we're going to be talking rockets at our club Christmas party with some of our club members. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be different. Stick around. The Rocketry Show starts right after this. Today's episode of The Rocketry Show is brought to you by Insane Rockets, E-Rockets, Sirius Rocketry, North Coast Rocketry, and this month's patrons: Jason Cook, B. Cook, L. Rayburn, John Beans, P. Olivieri, Gary Rosenfield, Steven Spencer, Charlie Savoy, E. Hundell, S. Feinberg, C. McCauley, J. Thompson, R. Hoagie, M. Isleward, P. Calvin, R. Smith, J. Pullman, C. Shramko, M. Erisman, J. Bryan, and JohnRocket.com, LLC. You too can help support the show as well. Just go to patreon.com/TheRocketryShow. That's patreon.com/TheRocketryShow.
You're listening to The Rocketry Show, brought to you by the guys who love the smell of burning ammonium perchlorate in the morning. If it makes fire, smoke, lots of noise, and flies into the heavens, then these guys are all about it. Here are CG, Jim, and the Rocket Noob.
Welcome to another edition of The Rocketry Show at therocketryshow.com. Now, before we begin, I mentioned that this show is going to be something a little different. And a little different it is, because it's a Rocketry Show Christmas party style. Woo-hoo. So we're here at our home club, Manaway Township Missile Agency, or MTMA, in our chapter 606, as well as a Chris Pearson is here from NOTRA, the Northern Ohio Tripoli Club, and he's joining us. And we decided we're going to do a show at our Christmas party and have rocket stories, because what did we all talk about it? When rocket people get together at a party.
Well, you know, it was kind of funny because, like, we're having dinner and it's like, these are great stories. Hold them. Don't say anything. We got to put it onto the show.
Yeah. So everyone had their Christmas party meals and started spewing stories. And it's like, stop. Save them. So we are at the house of one of our club members, John Ulizzi. And thanks for having the party. And absolutely, we're sitting in his living room here doing this this show that'll be going all over the world. So this is what his living room sounds like. Thank you, John.
Welcome.
The man who goes, the man who brings a fishing rod to a rocket launch.
Well, you know, it is important to have.
And
you never know.
Use it more than once.
Yeah, and he's had to use it. And why is that? So why don't you step up to the big mic there and share your story? The man who brings a fishing rod for rockets. It's key piece of equipment for you.
Well, it is. See, at our low power field, we have this lake that I think it was you, actually, that told me the name of lake.
I think it was I'm trying to remember if it was it may have been at the time, Mark Rechtenwall, who was president. I think you may have even named that lake.
Lake Wobegon?
Yes. You told me it was called Lake Wobegon.
Yes.
Because it'd be woeful and your rockets be gone.
Yes.
That's it.
And I...
I think actually it was, I think Cornelius and I were talking, just doing some bantering, and I think it was a collective effort, actually, yeah, between a couple of us.
I think you explained that to me a year or so ago, and this past June, I learned that the hard way when one of my tube fin rockets decided to land right in the middle of the lake with a chute release and an altimeter 3 in it. Not being a quitter and having... there's always a good chance that there's at least one fishing rod in my vehicle at any given time. Sometimes several
just
more.
Just one?
Sometimes several more. I think the rod holder in the truck holds 7 on the ceiling, so whatever. But I pulled one out, and Sean Guzek and I went up to the lake, and we rigged up something that was nice and heavy and had a hook on it, and rocket was laying there right in the middle, shroud line and everything, all in a row. It didn't sink. So we cast it out over the shroud line and reeled the sucker in and drained it out, took it home. And last weekend, I flew it again with an H-118 in it and did my level one cert.
And it was a beautiful flight. So I was fortunate enough to see that thing fly, because I've never really seen that the rear ejection really work the way that it worked that day. Could you tell us a little bit about the G that went up on that particular rocket? It's about, to give the audience a little bit of a backstory, it's about a 3 foot three foot long rocket, give or take. Oh, 5 feet long? Okay, 5 foot long rocket. It's a tube fin design with a rear ejection. So tell them a little bit about the rocket, and then like tell us about that G flight, because my TARC team was like, love this flight. They still talk about it.
Well, it's a scratch built model that I came up with. There's two things that I hate about model rocketry. One of them is sanding balsa or plywood fins.
You have to tell the
noob
that.
So my solution for that is tube fins. And I figured out how to slash cut them and kind of make them look pretty cool. And that works out pretty well. And then the other thing that I hate about model rocketry is ejection wadding. So my answer to that is rear ejection, where you have whatever your recovery device is, a parachute or a streamer or whatever, it's actually wrapped around the motor core and is separated from the ejection gases by the forward baffle. So the system works perfectly. Instead of deploying the nose cone, it deploys the engine core, and out with the engine core comes your recovery device, and hopefully it all works out.
Yeah, but you added a little wrinkle to it being modern and all, so tell us a little bit about the one flight, because my guy saw this rocket go up. It was on a G80, if that's correct, right?
Right.
Okay, so a Blue Thunder, single-use motor, and...
No, it was not. It was not a Blue Thunder, because it was not an Estes Aerotech.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
It was a Roadrunner G80, and I don't remember the propellant, but I mean, Chris can fill us in later on that. But it burns a little bit differently. Anyways, it was a G80-10. I thought it was a G87, but when I looked at it, I was, oh wow, this is 10-second delay, and I didn't have the wherewithal to cut the delay down, but. The previous flight was on an F-56, 6-second delay, and that was perfect in terms of deploying at apogee. So I thought
FG, yeah, right.
I thought G, another couple seconds should be okay. That wasn't quite accurate. So the rocket went up, and then it started coming down like a lawn dart. And everybody's taking cover, and everybody's looking at it, and it's coming in hot like a missile. And at about what I should also include here is that it's kind of dual deploy in that it uses a chute release.
That's what I'm talking about.
This rocket is actually large enough. It's a BT-80 airframe with a 29 millimeter motor mount. There's enough room in there not only to wrap a parachute around the motor core, but there's enough room to sneak a chute release in there as well.
That's okay. Awesome.
So ideally we get ejection at apogee, and that screws up the airfoil and the thing tumbles, and then we have, you know, chute deployment at a more reasonable altitude. But in this case, with the long ejection, it just went up, it came back down like a missile, and about 400 feet off the ground the back of it ejects out instead of the nose cone. So we're not having the traditional problems of ripping and zippering and any of that stuff. But the rear eject, the motor core just jettisons. And then about a second after that, the chute release opens up. And let's just say all the shock cords were pretty much about stretched to the limit.
It was really funny because we were off in a distance a little bit, and when we saw the thing coming in ballistic, I'm like, guys, heads up, let's watch what's going on. I know it's John's and it's a rear ejection, so it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. And I was like, anytime now. And then there was the event. I was like, cool, okay. And then I'm sitting there going, the chute didn't come out. And then it seemed like it was only about 100 feet up that the actual chute actually inflated. But it was just awesome because there was that moment of the oh no turning into oh yeah. So I think there was a collective like sigh of relief or yeah from the crowd.
The chute release was set for 200 feet.
Okay.
But as fast as it was coming in, by the time the chute completely opened, we were probably less than 100 feet.
But it inflated perfectly.
It inflated perfectly, like, slowed the beast down, and soft, you know, at about 10 feet, and it made a nice soft landing. It was pretty cool.
oh no, yeah.
That's about what it was. The guy, the team was still talking about that because, like, you know, John had gotten a level one that day, and four of my guys had gotten level ones that day, so they're all pumped and into it and everything, and they're like, oh no, that I want to do that. So, like, all right, guys, let's like, cool. let's step back a minute. We're gonna do all kinds of stuff, but I don't know if I want to try to repeat that, because the moment you try and do something like that, you're gonna, it's not gonna work.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you lawn dart into the hood of somebody's car.
Not yes. Good.
Even worse. Thanks for your story. That was pretty cool. I know you've got more. And as we go on, I suspect you're gonna come back around and share another story.
No problem there.
It's the Rocketry Show. We're doing our, this is like our Christmas special.
Ho, ho, ho.
We're at our club Christmas party, and we're doing what rocket people always do at parties. We talk rockets. And so we're sharing stories. We figured this will make a nice, fun show. And you can share your stories as well with us, and we can read them later if you want. You can email mailbag@therocketryshow.com, and you can share your favorite rocket story. And you can also use the SpeakPipe thing on our website. And what that is that you go into the website, and there's a little tab off to the right side. If you click on it and drag it over, you can hit record, and it'll use whatever your device's default microphone is. So if it's your computer, it'll use your computer microphone. If it's your iPhone or whatever, it'll use the microphone in that. And you can record a message and hit send. It'll come to us, and we can play back your story as well. We did something like this back early on in the show. We got a few responses, and I always thought that was always kind of cool to hear everyone's stories. And
if we do get a recording and it's something that we put on the show, you'll even hear your own voice.
Exactly.
So, unless you don't want to do that, then you can just email us.
Yeah, you might get some people that don't want to, that they can't take hearing their voice. But hey, it's fun. It's for the good of rocketry.
Hells yeah.
Yeah, it's for the good of the rocketry. All righty, cool. So, we have any other stories here that anybody wants to share?
I think we're going to have to convince our new president of the MTMA to have a little chat about a little bit of stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff, thanks for allowing us to chat with you a little bit. Can you tell us, welcome, and welcome to the presidency. Can you tell us a little bit about how that how you became president of the MTMA?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it was a little bit of a surprise. I've actually been a club member of MTMA for a few months.
Yeah, that's about
and, right. And I decided to more get back into rocketry for my youngest son, with my youngest son, I should say. And we came out to the club, and we came to a few launches, and, you know, I said, well, you know, there's a good bunch of guys, and I think I'm going to join and then try and give back what I can. And John heard it, and all of a sudden at the next meeting where we were having the club elections, I became nominated for the presidency. So, and before I had a chance to accept the nomination, I was elected. So it was
in a whirlwind landslide election.
Yeah.
Unanimous vote.
It was a bit different than the actual presidential election. It was kind of a landslide.
A real landslide.
Yeah, and, you know, demanding a recount when you win is kind of frowned upon. So, it's a good opportunity, and I hope to serve the club well and, you know, maybe not ruffle any feathers, but hopefully give some more back than I'm getting out of it, and help the hobby.
Well, it's certainly appreciated, because the one thing that I noticed when I first met you at one of the launches is that you've got this incredible ability of to build model rockets beautifully. Like, you have a certain craftsmanship that is, you know. I mean, everybody's pretty good, but you're beyond that. And you have a certain type of rocket that you have that is like your baby. So do you want to talk about the Blobblin' a little bit? Tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, well, you know, when I got back into rocketry, and this is my second return to rocketry, but I always wanted to reproduce the rockets that I had when I was a kid.
Sounds good. One
of the rockets, oddly enough, that I never had when I was a kid was the Estes Goblin.
Classic.
And I've got a Goblin. I've actually got a few of the actual re-release Goblin kits.
Semrock or...
I've actually got the Estes. I don't own a Semrock, which is odd because at this point in time, Estes and Semrock both sell the Goblin kit.
Right, right.
So I do have the Estes ones. I never did get a Semrock one. But I made it and I fell in love with it. And it's a simple, it's black and yellow. It's a simple scheme. It's got a cool little goblin graphic on the fin. And I don't know if you've noticed the back window of my truck.
Yes, I have.
I made a vinyl goblin cutout that I've got back there.
True rocket nerd.
Yeah, and people look at me when they drive by and they're like, what in the heck is that
thing on your
window?
You also have the Red Max number
I do.
Moniker on that,
and nobody
too.
Knows. And there's even some Rocketeers that see that and don't know what that is. They have to ask. That's a mystery. That number was on, I believe it was on the Citation series issue of the Der Red Max from Estes, and it was not on the regular kit.
I don't know if you noticed, but I've got that on my nose cone of my Red Max.
Okay. I did notice that. It made me grin. So, but anyway, back to the Goblin. I made the original Goblin, and sometime later, I got an Estes Big Daddy. And for whatever reason, that moved right up to the top of my build pile, which is substantial at times. So the only thing I didn't like about it was I didn't like the color scheme that was on it, the default decoration. And as I was sitting there on my build table, which to my wife's dismay is my kitchen table at the moment.
She's an awesome woman. She's here with us
now. She's sitting within arm's reach of me.
Yes, she's shaking her head no. In agreement.
Yeah. But we all love her for everything that she does. Thank you.
And for what she puts up with. Yes. So I was sitting there and my Goblin was on the table and I looked at the Goblin and I looked at the Big Daddy and I went, I need to make... At first I thought I'll make the V2 in the black and yellow color scheme that Estes used on their re-release. And then I looked at the Goblin and I thought, no, better yet, I'm going to make a Goblin. But it's fatter than a Goblin. What can I call it? And so the Blobblin was born. So I went and I redid the decal and I changed the word Goblin to Blobblin. I rescaled it and when the rocket was done, I painted it up and I decorated it up and it looks like a Big Daddy version of the Goblin.
We'll have to get a picture of that and put it up on the website because like when I first saw that on the field, I was like, man, you know what you're doing with this. This is good.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate that. I'm a little picky about details sometimes. I've been accused of being I was just accused of being a scale nerd. And I couldn't argue with it because I'm like, yeah, I guess I kind of am. But you know, back when I was a kid, I had a lot less patience than I do now. And like John,
yeah,
I don't like sanding and filling and sanding and filling and sanding and filling.
I don't know if there's anybody that loves doing that I haven't met anybody.
I'm not a big fan of it, but I do find it useful as a when I need to think about something else.
Okay.
And it's a boring thing that I have to like work stuff. Sometimes it's like a lot of math or
mindless repetition.
And it's so yeah, just that mindless repetition just allows my one part of my brain to focus on what it is I want to do. And not drift off into, now this equation means, oh, wait a minute, I got to put something in the...
There were times that a few of us have been called out for actually, while we're doing a show, we're all in our respective basements, and some of us are actually doing some work on sanding.
Yes,
things.
You were sanding on the last show.
I was. Yes. I'm sorry.
No one else heard it, but I heard it while we were recording, it's like somebody's sanding. And then when I was editing the show down, I said, there it is. And I isolated, and it was you.
Yeah, I was working on the rebuild of one rocket that I had a Kato on, and I was sanding paint at the time. So it wasn't a full sand of wood, so I was sanding of paint. So good on you for catching that.
Well, the part of the upgrades with the studio now is that we're able to isolate that kind of stuff. So it never made it on the podcast. It was just like an inside thing.
Busted.
And I was going to mention that in the next show. And you brought it up, so there you go.
It's like when you're on a conference call from work and somebody's eating their lunch and you can hear them chew.
Yes.
It's like, will you mute your microphone already?
Wow.
So where were we? We're talking about
sanding
and filling. Yeah.
Sanding.
Well, I cheated on the guy on the Blobblin. I actually papered the fins.
That's so, not cheating. That's
that was the first time I'd ever tried papering the fins, and it actually worked out so well. I've done that on a couple of other models since then.
So how do you do your papering? Because I use computer label, and I'll sanding seal it over that. What do you do for your stuff?
I bought a pack of full sheet Avery self-adhesive labels, and I just put those on, and I CA the edges that aren't covered. You know, I'll round it over the leading edge that's rounded, and then the other edges get CA'd. put a little bit of light sanding to smooth down the CA, and then I just...
I love the label paper because it's so strong for fins, and especially if you're building with balsa, you need to have something in there. I mean, I'm getting back into building the smaller ones because I've talked about the BT-55 or BT-60 dual deploy rocket that I'm working on. I'm using plywood on that, but I started building back in balsa wood with my son, and it's kind of fun to paper those fins up. I mean, I papered an alpha just because I could.
You could.
Yeah, why not?
You know, I want to move up, a lot higher in power and that kind of stuff. I'm just having so much fun building the older kits, the smaller kits.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just so much fun. But there's always that, I've got bigger kits sitting there waiting in the wings ready to go, so.
I think if you asked anybody who's into this hobby, like, what their build pile is, I have approximately maybe 10 or 15 things that I'm working on that I could be working on or that I will be working on. I think the average is about 10. From what I've talked to people, just in a straw poll. But so your build pile is probably about as big as everybody else's.
Well, I kind of call it my stash. we did something a couple of weeks ago, my wife and I, as we were reorganizing the stash, and probably wasn't such a hot idea to do, but I made a spreadsheet of all my kits and whether they were built in or in process or still in the bag or box. And it's about 150 kits right now.
Okay. Well, you beat the odds.
So it's a little bit more than the average. But like I was saying earlier, before we were eating it, I like to always have a kit that I build and then one for the pile, one for the stash. It's one of those things where I look back and I go, man, I wish that I still had one of those kits. Not because it's the collector in me. It's like, not because that I really want, because a lot of guys will sell them and they're thinking, mm-hmm. Well, that's worth a fortune. I mean, I've bought a bunch of kits that you can't buy anymore from old stock sellers, and it's good to have them. And I just wish I would have kept them. And then now moving forward, it's like they'll come out with a kit or a reissue, or even if it's a really cool new kit, and I'll want to buy two of them just because I know that eventually they're going to discontinue them and you won't be able to get them anymore.
Yeah, it sounds like the Saturn V from Estes that keeps coming and going and coming and going. But
right.
The one that I have in particular is the D-Region Tomahawk from Estes. Like, there was a sale like a little while back where they were like $10. I think I bought four of them. So,
yeah.
Just to have them.
And I have two of them that I built. I haven't flown them in a while, though. I almost forgot about that.
Yeah, it was like that with the Estes Air... Airborne surveillance missile.
Okay.
There was that one, and then there was the Dur Red Max and the Asteroid Explorer, which they still haven't re-released. I'm waiting for that one. I know Sumrock has a fin set available for it.
Oh.
But the Dur Red Max and the Airborne Surveillance Missile, I wanted to reproduce those years ago, and so I built scratch-built clone kits of them from plans, redid the decals, and I built copies, and I even built a slightly upscaled version of the airborne surveillance missile, and then Estes re-released them. So I have probably five of the airborne surveillance missile kits and three or four of the Dur Red Maxes now. And
too much is never enough, is it? Really? I mean, in the grand scheme of things?
They're cheap,
That's right.
Alrighty, we are at our club Christmas party, and we're talking about rocket stories, your rocket stories, and more here at the Rocketry Show. We're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll come back with more stories right after this.
North Coast Rocketry, one of the first high-power rocketry kit companies ever, takes advantage of over 30 years of high-power experience by a world-class rocketeer. You can look to North Coast Rocketry to expand your high-power rocket fleet. In addition to great kits, North Coast Rocketry also stocks lots of must-have items and accessories for every rocketeer's workshop. Find out more about these kits and other great products today. Go to NorthCoastRocketry.com. And while you're there, don't forget to get their latest catalog, NorthCoastRocketry.com. Advanced rockets that are easy to build, fun to fly, and look great on display. It's time for Serious Rocketry.
Sirius Rocketry, since 1998, providing the Rocketeer with great kits, motors, supplies, and more. They have lots of products in their ever-growing web store with fast shipping, wide selection, and courteous service. You can also check out the amazing and popular Sirius Rocketry kits that harken back to the days of fun-to-build detailed kits that are more than just three fins and a nose cone. And Gene has been looking into some kits. Gene, tell us what you found.
Absolutely, I have. With all the holiday talk that we've had, and it's been a great show, I've started getting a little bit nostalgic. And one of the first rockets I ever built as a kid was the Estes Gyroc. And what was cool about it is it goes up, the motor pod pops out at apogee during the ejection, and the rocket helicopters down. So it's kind of neat to watch it come down. Well, on Sirius Rocketry's website, Semrock has a Gyroc that is actually called the Semrock Gyroc. So it is based on the original 1965 Estes kit, and it is a phenomenal rocket, and the deal this week is at $899. Body tube of about 0.7 inches, 6.5 inches long. The fin span is about 4 inches. Laser-cut balsa, precision-tuned balsa nose cone, and it has nice water slide decals and flies on half A's or A-tenths. It's a fantastic rocket for an incredible price of $899. So if you guys know where to go, it's at Sirius Rocketry.
In addition to all of that, Sirius Rocketry's website features real-time stock tracking, which lets you order with confidence from their online store, no having to call or write to see if something is really in stock. When you're ready to fly, Sirius Rocketry has motors and hardware in stock and ready to ship from Estes through Aerotech High Power. Ask them about their club specials, and you can visit their website at siriusrocketry.biz and .com. Sirius Rocketry, for the Sirius Rocketeer. Welcome back to The Rocketry Show at therocketryshow.com. It is a Christmas party show. Yes, ho, ho, ho. Or 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The Rocket Santa. Anyhow, we're doing our Christmas stories, and we're sharing it with our club members from our local club, MTMA. And we're having our Christmas party. So we set up things here, and we're trading stories. We have with us at the party here, Chris Pearson, who's been on the show a few times with us here. While he's technically not a member of the club, he's an honorary member because you hang around so much with us. So there you go. But you're the prefect of your own NOTRA, right?
Yes, Northern Ohio Tripoli.
So so welcome, and you've got stories. And before we go with your story right away, well, we got you. We had you on the show doing talking about the FAA waivers and all that. And I understand there's a change, another change that's happened since our show, or...
Well, so isn't it something if it's over 50,000 feet?
Yes.
Oh, that's a Class 3 waiver.
Uh-huh.
the reason I didn't speak about it is because so few people will ever do it.
Ah, okay.
If the vehicle that you're going to fly is being powered by more than an O motor, which means P motor and above, or you expect it to achieve more than 50,000 feet in altitude, then you have to apply for a separate waiver just for that flight. And there is a member in Tripoli, Dick Embry, who himself is a commercial pilot, who is our FAA liaison, and he handles those Class 3 waivers. And so if you wanted, and there's a lot more documentation that you have to do for a Class 3 waiver than even doing a Level 3 certification attempt. It's there's volumes of stuff that you have to give them information-wise, simulations and recovery areas, you know, simulations and stuff like that. So, but that's the big change that happened just, you know, a few years ago. So if you go out to the big launches now, very few people fly P motors, but a lot of people are flying O motors. You know, like, yeah, it's an O motor. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. You know, so.
Well, we found that kind of interesting, though, because, you know, did they have to go in front of a board, or do they just submit the paperwork?
They just have to submit the paperwork.
Okay. Because I was worried about that. I was like, well, do you have to go bare your soul in front of these people that will say yay or nay based upon?
No. Okay. Just you submit a bunch of paperwork, answer a bunch of questions, and then they come forward. They submit that to the FAA, and the FAA gives you the clearance.
Okay. Thanks for clearing that up for us, because that was a question that some guys had that had gotten in touch with us.
So cool. Thanks. Now, fun stuff, stories. So,
Yeah, John was talking about covering fins with paper and everything like that, and he just asked a question off mic about, well, can't you do that with plywood too for high power rockets? Well, in the case of covering balsa wood fins with paper, I think the primary reason for doing that is to add strength to the balsa wood.
Right.
I've only done it once on a kit, and the putting the paper on plywood fins, probably the only reason to do it would be so you don't have to sand and seal them. And I, like John, hate sanding and sealing. In fact, I don't do it anymore. Everything, all my rockets have fiberglass fins. All right. And occasionally I do have to do a balsa wood nose cone if it's a custom nose cone. But what I do is I actually seal it with epoxy first. And then you just have to sand it like mad. And then it just takes a couple of coats of primer to take care of the any grain that may be left. But in the case of fiberglass, in the case of plywood fins, what I do, and I've seen a lot of guys do this, is in order to get rid of the grain and add a little bit of strength to the plywood fin, is you coat the fin with, you give it a layer 3/4 inch fiberglass on top of it. And if you've ever seen 3/4 inch fiberglass, it's very, very fine cloth. And really doesn't add any strength, but it gets rid of the need to, you know, use sanding sealer on that fin. Mm-hmm. And I hate doing it on plywood just as much as I hate doing it on anything else. But the nice thing about doing plywood is I use a Makita orbital sander.
Right. That makes it a lot faster.
It saves a lot of time. Yeah. I mean, how many of you have knuckles that bend the wrong direction from sanding fins all your life, right? Yeah, I have those. So, but the easiest way to do it with the 3/4 ounce glass is you cut a piece of the fiberglass, however.
By the way, behind you, everyone's checking their fingers
behind for their knuckles.
Yeah, well, I've got that. You know, the knuckles that come out of joint. And the way you do that is basically you cut a piece of fiberglass just a little bit bigger, of course, to overlap the edges of the fin. And then you spray the fin, the surface that you want to apply the fiberglass to, with a spray adhesive. In my case, I use the Scotch Super 77, which you can get at an art supply store like Blix, or you anywhere, you know, that sells, you know, art supplies. You can buy it probably Michael's or, you know, one of those chain stores. And then you lay the fiberglass on it, and then just use a fiberglass roller. And then after you've got it on the fin on both sides, then you put the fiberglass resin on it, and it'll soak right through the glass, and then let it cure, and then you just have to sand it a little bit to get it smooth.
I've heard that works well. There's also somebody was telling me that they use just finishing epoxy just to cover the grain. They're not even worried about strength. They use it's a kind of that thin epoxy.
Yes.
And they'll let it sit there, and then that'll work for them too.
When I had NCR, we sold they called it a self-leveling finishing epoxy.
Right.
And it was super thin, and you just laid it on, and it was a relatively long cure, but it would dry like glass. All right, because it would self-level, and it was perfectly, absolutely smooth. I use a thin, long-setting epoxy that I get from U.S. Composites. But you can get it from Fiberglass or West or anything like that. You can get the real thin.
Yeah, the finishing stuff.
Finishing epoxies, yes.
Ideas. Lots of ideas.
We got a lot of those. Execution is the thing.
That's true. Thanks for your story.
You're welcome.
Getting back to the getting rid of sanding techniques, whether it's the paper or the fiberglass resin or whatever, are you guys doing this to the fins once they're on the rocket, or are you doing it before you attach the fin to the rocket?
Definitely before.
When you're papering it, when you're primering it, all that stuff.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I don't paper any balsa fins until I'm ready to build the rocket, but I never do it afterwards. I did try it once, and I think once was enough.
Okay. So if you have a rocket that's got through the wall fins, you just mask that part off.
Just mask it off. Okay. Yeah. Just mask it off and just, or if you're going with fiberglass, you could make your slot a little wider.
Okay.
From the first Estes Alpha that I bought back when I was a teenager, reading the instructions, I thought it was really stupid to glue the fin to the rocket and then sand and seal it.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And I never have done that. I mean, in all the rockets that I've ever built, I always sand and seal the fin before I glue it to the rocket, just leaving a little root edge uncovered. And I still do that today with the high power stuff. All right. It's especially easy with the high power stuff because it's through the wall, so you've got that big tang, mm-hmm. and you can leave about a quarter of an inch above where the body tube would meet the fin, and just that would be your fillet adhesion point, and you know, and it's all sanded. Then, you know, once you got the fillets on, you know, all you have to do is paint it after that.
Well, there is that, but when you get into the high power stuff, I actually chickened down on my Archer. I had the place where I work at, I've got a bus garage, and the guys back there were all into seeing the rocket, so I said, I'll bring it back here and you guys can play with it, but you got to paint it for me if that's okay, and they did.
Oh, boy.
So I lucked out on that one. So, Ford White, so and waterproof.
Mm.
That is one of the big problems with high power rockets as opposed to model rockets, is that I know a number of guys that build a lot of model rockets, and they have small paint booths in their basements, mm-hmm. but they're not more than about maybe a meter wide. And now when you're doing high power stuff, I have to set up a paint booth in my garage with huge sheets of cardboard to keep the overspray from going all over my motorcycles and stuff like that. So it's a little more difficult.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, rather than spraying with small cans than using an HVLP gun.
And remember, don't get me started on those small cans, right?
Oh, yeah, we just went on a whole rant about that earlier.
But if you've got a larger airframe, what's wrong with just painting the individual sections and then assembling them?
I have some individual sections that are 5 feet long. Okay, I mean, in fact, I gave one of these body tubes to... the gym over there, the 5 foot long section of 5.5 inch tube.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and it's for making really big rockets.
Yeah, and painting that is like if I'm going to rattle can that, I'm going to, well, I first of all, I probably wouldn't. I'd probably get a compressor or some kind of paint sprayer to do it, or find a friend who's got a paint spray booth that he does cars with, because I've got a friend like that has that. So if I'm going to paint a larger high power rocket, I'm definitely going to like go into an automotive kind of a paint thing, or just, you know, maybe bribe the guys at school to paint it for me. So
yeah, you may be a little shocked at first to see how expensive automotive paint is,
mm-hmm.
Especially some of the colors. White usually isn't that expensive, and neither is black, but red or yellow are like three times the cost of...
Yeah,
of
why is that? I've noticed that.
Because you're adding so many more colors to it. I mean, yellow may seem real simple, or red may seem real simple, but there's actually like five or six different colors that are in that color of paint. And I have a friend of mine that's a body shop guy, and he says, you know, give me your rockets, I'll paint them for you.
You nice, know? There you go.
And it's just the trouble of lugging them down to Akron to do that.
Mm-hmm. That'll probably be worth it, though, I would think.
Yeah, yeah.
Alrighty, and now I had something I was going to follow up on, but then that was so interesting I forgot.
Oh, let's talk about aluminum metal flake in automotive paint. How's that?
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I was going to make a comment about using a rattle can to paint 5 foot section of rocket. It'll clog on you after the first spray.
I could go on another tirade, but I was talking like just before dinner, I was talking about how I'm really pissed off at a certain paint manufacturer who will remain nameless. So every time I try and use a rattle can, if I'm spraying just, you know, a mid power or a smaller rocket or whatever, I do a couple of coats of paint on, well, a coat of paint, let it dry. I go back to get the can of paint. I've already turned the nozzle upside down, sprayed it out so that it's clean, pulled the nozzle off, put that in turpentine and hold on to that for later. And then I go back to the can, get the new nozzle, put it back on there, and it's clogged and it sputters because it's clogged at the stem of the can. Hate that.
You just have to really shake that can up.
I've done that.
They tell you to shake it for a full minute.
I know. I've done it for two. I've timed it on my iPhone. For God's sakes, man, this is horrible.
to shake it upside down?
I store them upside down now.
Oh, okay.
And I still get a lot of nothing. This is my latest tirade, so I'm not going to detract from the holidays because I could make this a horribly, horrendous, like, kind of dramatic event, but it's the holidays, and I'll remember that. So I'll step back from that little tirade just for a minute, though. So,
but just for a minute?
Just for a minute. So okay. If anybody asks about it, or if anybody has any ideas about Rust-Oleum, oh, did I say that? I think I did. So if anybody has any ideas about that, let me know. Just shoot us an email or use the various communication methods at therocketryshow.com. And let me know.
Right, the new Rust-Oleum paints that they're selling are much different than the old stuff that they used to, which was, which actually had like, I was told that it actually had oil in it, and that was to prevent rusting, and that's why you could not use any other
paint with it,
either on it or it on any other paint. And why you couldn't like multicoat it and stuff like that.
Okay.
Because it was the formula that was so different. But the paints that they're using now, that they're making now, they make a lot of different varieties. I mean, there was a time when I was the biggest Krylon,
junkie.
aficionado, and basically an apostle for Krylon. I thought it was the greatest paint in the world. Right now, there's 20 different types of Krylon paint. It used to be in the old days that Krylon was Krylon,
right?
All right, and there was only one. Well, now they make many, many different types for different applications. And I've stopped using it because I found it very difficult to use. All right, and I am actually using Rust-Oleum stuff now, mainly because it's what the closest hardware store has.
That's about it.
and actually, the many of the chains now, like Ace Hardware, True Value Hardware, and even Home Depot, you know, have the entire Rust-Oleum line in spray cans, and so you never have any trouble finding it.
No, I've that's what I'm stuck with right now. And like, and then the only thing is, it only happens with like just the white. It's not the gloss white, it's not the flat white, it's the semi-gloss, which is what I like. So that's the only paint that I've had this big issue with.
The only problem I've had with their paints is the black, actually. In fact, I just went to recoat a nose cone that I had painted black. You know, like
I
last year, and I sprayed it, and it crinkled. I mean, the whole nose cone crinkled.
Oh, God, I hate that.
Oh, I've had that happen with the black, too.
Yeah, and it's, you know, use thinner to get all the paint off, you know, clean it off,
sand
reprimer it.
It,
and then put fresh paint on it. That's all you can do. So, but I've had the same problem with black Krylon doing that.
See, I haven't had the black. I've had the blue.
Uh-huh.
Not happened with me on that. And that's, I figured that was because I was trying to spray paint in 30 degrees weather and the temperature differences. But shame on me, right?
Mm. Jim, which white is it that's giving you trouble?
Not the gloss, not the flat, but the semi-gloss white.
Semi-gloss, okay. I've not used that paint, but I've used a bunch of different colors in Rust-Oleum and a bunch of clear as well.
Right.
I have the matte clear and I have the glossy clear. I'm a big fan of
coating?
Spraying the inside of the tube.
Okay.
So that it doesn't pick up moisture and whatnot from
makes sense.
From residue. I actually learned that trick from Chris, but he uses epoxy and that's way too much work. So I spray clear on inside a tube on a small. So I've always got, the bottom line is I've always got clear around glossy and matte.
Matt.
And I found that, and maybe this might help you, I'm not having those cans. I spray three or four rockets with one of those over the course of a couple months.
Nice.
And I empty the entire can without a problem.
That is what I'm looking for.
Same with the colors that I've been using. And then what I'm, you know, I guess what I'm saying is maybe if you used the flat white or the matte white.
And then go with a gloss or,
real light gloss over it, maybe you wouldn't have the problem. I just a wild guess.
It's a possibility. I did used to clear coat stuff, but what I found is, like, I used to do a lot of launching in the colder weather when we had a high power field for a while that was out east, and we used to fly in the wintertime. I would notice that the clear coat would start to flake off because of the cold. It would start to chip and it would flake off. So I stopped using it at that point. But I'm always worth a shot by going back. I mean,
well, that's because you're putting clear coat on top of a bunch of other colors.
Right.
See, I'm putting clear coat right on the tube. You know, if you if you see any of my rockets, they're like never painted. They're lucky if they get clear coat.
True. Are you using a primer underneath your?
Absolutely. Yeah, automotive primer, because that's it's nice, it's sandable, and it kind of fills gaps.
Is it the Sherwin Williams? I mean, I'm sorry.
It's the same stuff, Krylon. It's the same brand.
Krylon or
Rust-Oleum. I always match it like the manufacturer to manufacturer for primer and paint.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I've been using the Rust-Oleum primer, and I've never had any trouble with their own paints. But when you try mixing other brands of paint, that's when you get into trouble.
I learned that early on when I got a bunch of orange peeling on one rocket that particularly pissed me off. So, but that happens. So,
Another problem I found with the Rust-Oleum they have with the Krylon, too, is that with the Rust-Oleum, you have to spray additional coats within 1 hour.
Right.
They say either one hour or after 48.
Right.
Because the paint has to be completely cured, or else you get the dreaded crinkles. I've had even later on, after days, weeks, or months later, had the paint crinkle when I've put additional coats of paint over the top of it. So it isn't isolated, just to one brand of paint or maybe a particular color.
True. Now, we could probably go into a whole show about that.
We practically turned into that. I was going to say that with my level one rocket that I've been flying forever, it seems, anybody that's been in the club for a while has seen at any of high power launches would see me fly Nezru around. And it's got, after a while, it gets, the paint gets all chipped and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'll get the rocket, and it's like, it's bothering me. Do I feel lucky today? And I'll get the color out, and I'll touch it up again. But that's always, like, I've had that happen, too. Like, we do a touch-up on the rocket years later with the paint, and it'll crinkle up, and it's like, I should have just left it. And the Rocketry Show's Christmas special will continue right after this short message, and we'll pick up where we left off.
Hello, my fellow rocket geeks. Do you love getting great video from your flights, but sometimes miss turning on that keychain cam only to get a great still of your thumb? Hi, this is Gene from The Rocketry Show, and I've done that way too many times to count. I used to use those cheap keychain cams, but never thought the quality was any good, and being a geek with a really good smartphone in my pocket, I thought it was a waste to have that in my pocket, that my smartphone should be in my rocket. Then I ran into the Insane Rocketry app, available from Google Play Store for Android. This app not only gives you full real-time telemetry and Google Earth tracking, but it will also shoot up to 4K video, depending on your phone. And here's the best part. It'll automatically upload that awesome video to YouTube, and all of your telemetry data will be on the web while tracking the rocket in real time. I especially love having the videos uploaded right into YouTube. I've actually had the video appear there before I even recovered my rocket. It is crazy. No, wait, it's Insane Rocketry. Get that smartphone out of your pocket and into your rocket. Insane Rocketry app on Google Play for Android smartphones.
eRockets.biz, your home for unique model rocket kits. They've been busy working with their staff, along with some crafty rocketeers in the community, to come up with unique kits that are fun to fly and to show off in the field. When shopping, look for the new UFO Invader model rocket kit, as well as the Spaceman rocket, which is bound to have your fellow rocketeers stop and do a double take. Speaking of Spaceman, watch for the Spaceman Decal Design Contest. The winners of the best designs will get their decal published and a Mars lander to go along with their Spaceman rockets. There are also plenty of other new and reissue model rocket kits to choose from. eRockets.biz certainly has enough kits to keep you busy building rockets for a long time to come. eRockets.biz also supplies the Semrock line of airframes, nose cones, centering rings, motor mounts, and so much more. eRockets has more rocket parts available than anyone on Earth. Check out eRockets.biz today to learn more. eRockets.biz. If rocketry scares you, then go out and buy a train set. Welcome back to the Rocketry Show's Christmas Party Special. Let's get right back into the discussion right now.
So what do you want for Christmas or for Hanukkah or Kwanzaa? Or what do you celebrate? What do you guys want for that, for your holiday celebration?
Me, what do I want? I want a big workshop, Merkin. Built whatever I want in there, rocket-wise.
I want Cicerone to go back into full production.
Oh, you know, nice. I like that better. I like that one better. I was fairly new to Cicerone motor builds, and I was just saying earlier that my favorite one to fly on Nezru was the H-135 because it just looks so cool. And not only that, but that heavy rocket got maybe a few hundred feet higher than an H-180 reload did. So it was kind of cool on all fronts. And I was ready to get more, and the supplies were kind of like short because it wasn't a motor that people fly around us. So the local hobby center just didn't have any more. So I figured, I'll track it down and find more. And then the mishap happened, and I've been waiting for production to wind up again so I can try to track that down.
Cicerone in their press releases say that they're back up to like 80 to 90% production now. And I know that they're shipping them, casting tubes and liners from the top secret body tube manufacturing company here in Ohio. And so they are ramping up.
Mm-hmm.
And the last that I had heard is that they had actually built the new building that was to replace the one that had burned down. And so we're hoping that by, the next season, that they'll be back up to 100%.
Ooh, cool. Can't wait.
I'm curious to try more Cicerone high power loads myself. Be cool.
Yes. They are fun motors to fly.
Oh, I know. I had a lot of fun with just some Gs. I had some from the Rocket Club that was before me at the school. They had some Cicerone, like a 2-grain case and a couple of casings. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. So I tried a G53, I think it was. And it seemed to have a lot more kick. And it did definitely light faster than an Aerotech. So I was like, I'd like to explore this a little more. And I'd like to see it more in an I or a J. Maybe a K would be nice to see. So I'm looking forward to that.
How about our new president? What do you want? What do you want to see for Christmas?
It won't be Christmas. It'll probably be maybe tax return time. But I got my eye on a nice laser cutter.
Ooh, you're thinking big. I like it.
I'm looking at one of the. There's a couple of different ones out on the market, but we'll see. We'll see what Uncle Sam has to say about that after February.
And, I'll tell you. Like I have
40. Yeah, the one I'm looking at is the Glowforge. Which is really, you've got there's the level of the Chinese imports on eBay. And then this Glowforge is a lot more automated. It runs the software from the cloud. You can upload everything right directly from a computer to it. And it has a built-in camera, so it'll actually take a picture.
So you can see it.
Yeah, it takes a picture of whatever media that's in it. So you can actually position what you're going to cut through the app. Directly on the surface, it's a lot easier to set up and it's a lot more straightforward. And I believe it's a 40 or 45 watt laser, so it'll cut through a good size plywood. It'll make good high power fins.
What's the size of the bed on that?
I'm not sure. I don't remember. I want to say it's maybe 16 by 20.
Okay. It's a good size.
It's not huge, but I wouldn't want to go into production on kits with it, but it's for small scale stuff. It would be good cutting, centering rings
some easily. Fins you could probably do up to like maybe a half inch ply on that just to get.
Yeah, I think it's
not really not that thick.
I think it's 3/8 ply is what they say is the max on it.
Okay,
and you can go. I believe it's half inch acrylic.
Okay.
You can cut with that, which is...
Who wants to make some half-inch acrylic fins, baby?
Well, when I worked at Locke, we had a laser cutter, and it only had a 90-watt head on it. And we really should have gotten a bigger one, like at least 100. And it took a long time to cut the thicker plywood, maybe because it was aircraft-grade ply, and it had a lot of resin in it. And generated a lot of smoke when it did it because of all the resin. But we actually did not do the large rings or fins on the laser cutter because it took so long. And the dwell time on the laser on the material would burn it up too much. So we would cut the larger fins and rings on the ShopBot
Yep.
Which was a a 2D cutter.
CNC cutter
yeah.
Type of deal. Yeah.
We have one of those at the school that I work at, and that's what I cut my level 3 fins on is the ShopBot. But we also have a laser cutter that my guys are using to cut their TARC fins out of 1/4-inch plywood for that. Mm-hmm. But they're both very useful tools. I have access to both of them, which is pretty awesome. But I would love to have one of my own someday. So that's actually something that's been on my list. So.
You know, and I like a lot of the, you know, I was saying about cloning the older kits that don't come into production anymore. I like a lot of the more complex designs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, old school says you just, print out the pattern and you get out the X-Acto knife and you cut it out of a piece of balsa by hand. And that's fine, except that I find that my repeatability is not exactly as it should be. So sometimes they don't line up the same way on all the iterations of one fin that you cut.
Right.
And it would just be so nice to, I've been doing a lot of stuff with, CAD design software and such things like that. And, you know, you draw it once and you send it to the machine. You click and drag the pattern in a shape that'll fit on the whatever you're cutting it out of, and you just say, okay, go ahead and cut it. And you're good to go. And if you break one of them or you fly it and you lose a fin in midair and you want to make a new one, you print out a new one that's just the same way.
I'm telling you, for TARC, it's amazing because they're cutting out their own centering rings. They did a custom fin design because they went for a certain fin shape. I can't go into details, of course. That's all top secret stuff. But they went for a certain fin shape, and they custom did everything on this, on just using a laser cutter. So I was pretty proud of them. And it's like, okay, I have a dream of myself to upscale an Interceptor, an Estes Interceptor, somehow, someday down the road. It'd be real challenging with fiberglass and doing the pods and doing this nose cone thing, but it's just something in the back of my mind, and that would certainly, the CNC, the ShopBot would certainly be required for that, but that's just down the road.
And I've got a couple of extra of the Interceptor E type nose cones.
Oh, yeah.
In some kits that I don't plan on building as the kits, the, I forgot what it is. It's a real easy plastic tube kit that Estes came out with.
Like a trajector or something?
A trajector, yeah, that's exactly it. I bought a couple of those because they're really inexpensive to cannibalize the nose cone because I really have a Vindicator on my list. And
that's my childhood rocket, the Vindicator.
Was, yeah, that was like the partner to the Interceptor.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they use the same nose cone, and I have not seen a reproduction of that yet.
Right.
And I've got the Interceptor E, and I've got the full-size, the original size Interceptor. So what better companions for those would be an Interceptor clone or a Vindicator clone and a Vindicator E clone.
That would be cool.
So once you start laser cutting some fins, we'll talk. Because I've got the original, my original nose cone. The rest of my Vindicator rocket kind of rotted away over the years, but I've got the nose cone and just kind of one of those things. One of these days, I might be patient enough to do the fins.
I remember the one hobby shop that I used to go to a lot with my dad was Wings Hobby in Lakewood on Detroit. And they had a Vindicator hanging from the ceiling for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And that was one of those kits where I'm like, man, I really want that. And I never got it. And that's, you kick yourself for just... You kick yourself for developing other priorities when really what counts is the rocket. You should have just got it.
See, now we know why he's president of the club. That's it. That's
a real,
the way.
A true rocket nerd like the rest of us.
Hells yeah.
I try.
Did we run out? Did we exhaust the stories?
I think there's always stories, but those always come and go. And I think that right now that we're pretty much good as far as our holiday stuff goes. Everybody's got a smile on their face. People are just kicking back, possibly getting some of that glow of the holiday on, if you will.
And we hope you get a glow of the holiday with your family as well. And hopefully you got a little smile on your face in your workshop while you're listening to this program here. And we wish you and yours happy holidays.
And keep your eyes on the skies.
All right, everybody. It's been the Rocketry Show. Thanks for hanging out with our Christmas party with us.
Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas.